Looking at a Gemara here on Daf Chav Tes Amid Beis, okay, and the Gemara says the following, that as a general rule, if, let's say, Reuven comes to Shimon and he says to Shimon, you owe me 100, and there are no witnesses. So what Shimon says without witnesses is not binding at all. We don't assume that he's necessarily serious about what he said. But what happens if there are two witnesses there? So imagine Reuven says to Shimon, you owe me 1,000, and there are two witnesses there. The Gemara says that's also not a binding hodah. His admission is not binding. And why is that? Because, he can joke around even in front of two witnesses, unless the malva says to the lova, like the lender says to the borrower, he says, I want you to say it in front of these two witnesses. These are going to be the witnesses on your admission. And then he goes ahead and he says, yeah, I owe you a thousand, 100, whatever the sum is. In that case, he can't turn around and say, I was just joking around, because he appointed these two witnesses. However, the Gemara says that there is one scenario in which the Hodah is binding, and it's so binding, as we'll soon see, that the witnesses are allowed to even write down a shtar. They can take out a document and sign it and give it over to the malva, because let's say the lova says, he's going to deny it tomorrow. Right? He's going to deny it tomorrow. Or let's say if he doesn't deny it, he might not have the money to pay and he delays this, that, and the other thing. So he can't dilly-dally endlessly, because the edim are going to write this up in a shtar. Keep in mind also, the Eidim might die, or they might go to, I don't want to say China these days, but, they might, well, that's more or less like saying the same thing again. Anyway, not if they don't die from a virus, but they go out to who knows where. So it's great if the Malv has a shtar, and the Eidim are allowed to write a shtar. Now, why the Eidim are allowed to write a shtar? We have a principle in shtaros that you can't write a document unless the Meschayev, the one who stands to lose from the document, specifically and explicitly commissions you to write the shtar. And we're talking about a case where the lova didn't tell the witnesses to write the shtar. So the answer is something called kanu miyado. So right, you want to underline those two words, kanu miyado. And we discussed at great length that kanu miyado means that the two witnesses can do what's called a kinyan sudar. They take out a kerchief and or some sort of a kli, and they give it over to the lova, and they say, "We want you to give a kinyan here on the 1,000 that you're admitting. We want you to sort of transfer ownership over to Reuven. Reuven's the one who is tovea, and once the hodah, the confession, the admission of the lova now is jacked up to a kinyan level, now the witnesses are allowed to commit that to writing, and they can take out a shtar and write a shtar, sign it, testifying that this lova, we'll call him Shimon, admitted in our presence that he owes Reuven the malva such and such a sum, and they give the shtar over to the malva. Now the Rishonim, the Or Zeruah, Tagos Sashri, these are the Chachmei Ashkenaz, the Ashkenazic Rishonim from 1,000 years ago. They're not happy about this. Why? Havilon lemeimar di eno ela kinyan dvarim bialma. Again, you have to underline the words kinyan dvarim bialma. Now, what's a kinyan dvarim? A kinyan dvarim means if I commit myself to pay you money, that's called a kinyan dvarim. Why? Because every kinyan has to be chal on something tangible. We can't just, promises. I owe you and I promise to pay you. That's not called a kinyan, that's called kinyan dvarim. A kinyan has to be chal on something, like for example in the case of a ksuba, or in the case of chametz. Let's say every Pesach you come to the Rav and you want him to sell your chametz. So he now, on behalf of the buyer, is acquiring ownership on your chametz. You got a bottle of whiskey, that's chametz. So that's not a kinyan dvarim. That's a kinyan on a be'en meaning a solid, tangible substance. But if the lova is saying to the malva, I owe you 1,000, that's just dvarim bi'alma. That's just a statement of commitment. I commit to pay you so much money. So I'm just curious, what in secular law, lahavdil, is there such thing as a valid, you know, statement where I commit myself to pay you something, but there's no actual. Is it valid? Can I just commit myself to pay money?
If you testify and you said that, yes, in fact, that's what I said.
Right. Well, let's say, no, I'm asking, let's say, for example, there was a, how do you say in English, a magbit, there was a campaign to collect, to raise money for a charity organization. So some rich guy in the back, he says, I commit myself to pay $1,000. Is that legally binding?
That's exactly the problem. There's so many people who commit themselves, they don't pay, and there's no way you can get the money. Unless you have some type of written document.
Right. That's what the Rishonim are saying here, that, okay, he made a statement in front of two witnesses that he owes money. That's basically a Kinyan Dvarim. He's not giving over to the Malva anything. And again, if the Rishonim would have asked Berzon, I would have said the following. This is not a Kinyan Dvarim. What he's giving over is a Shibud. He's giving a lien on his property. That's real. That's tangible. But let's see what they say. He says, Hoyle, since Eno Machnelo Ata Shum Dover, he's not giving him over possession over anything specific. Veda Mischaivas El Kinyan is a. Eno Mischaivas El Kinyan, he's not expanding his Kinyan, right? So let's say you own only one and I want to give you a second one. So again, that would be fine. But here, there's no Kinyan to begin with. So what is the nature of this Konamiyado that they acquire something through the Suda? Vitirtsu, and they answer, Shekanu miyodu sheyitein lo chova ad zman ploni, o shelo yuchal loma parati. Very strange. I don't understand this, but I'll tell you over what he says. The Rishonim are claiming that what the Lova says in front of the two Edim is that I commit myself not just to pay this money which I owe him, but I'll pay it within a certain time period. Or alternatively, I deny any possibility of my claiming parati, I already paid you. Forget about it. That's not going to be a valid claim. And all this is going to be clinched by the shtar, the document that's being written up by the two witnesses and given over to the Malva. Tzarech biur. He says, what's going on? Ben Cain, Neima, am I name a Stam Kinyan Leksivo Medes? You know, if he has to say to the Eidim, well, I want to make a commitment to pay up by a certain date, or I won't be able to say I paid you back, etc., etc. I mean, that's something that has to be written in the Shtar. And certainly it's something that we have to hear from the words of the mouth of the Lova. The Lova was Mischaev. We didn't hear such a thing. So I'm just going to quickly peruse with my eyes the rest of the paragraph to see if this is enough for us as far as this paragraph is concerned. He says that Stam Kinyan Gimisham Shadu Sudha Marilak Noisam Yavienu Adheu Adriakam Yamshik Sam Talin Yaksim. Avalhocha, this is a long Rashbam. The Rashbam in Babasra is notorious for being very long. He says, Avalhocha, Iri Bechov, Shi Efshal Aknoski and Besudar, is Minol the Havile Lamemer, Shemaknil Besudarak, Shiuchal Skybashitin Lachovitz Man Ploni. I don't know. Alright, that's what I got. Metaltale vi isnu bainayu mai. Okay, the Gemara now has a suffix here on Daf Chav Tes Amid Beis in the following case. Reuven comes to Shimon and he says to Shimon, this diamond ring or this pearl necklace that's on your table here is mine. And in front of two witnesses, Shimon responds, yes, it's yours. So the Gemara now wants to know what exactly is the status here of this kind of hodah. Maybe this hodah, since it's on an object which is sitting there on the table, that's not considered mechusar gavaita. Means at the very moment that he makes such a confession to Shimon, Reuven confesses to Shimon, Reuven automatically owns that object. It's like it's already in his reshus. So the Muki Yosef, one of the Chachmei Sfarad, he says the five pirush, afilu metaltele de pikadon de bodoso nasa shalo mi boilahu ihavi kekarka olo. So in order to appreciate this Nemuki Yosef, let's see if we can go back to the Gemara. Okay, let's see. The Gemara says, just one second, where is this? Oh, here it is. So we're on Chav Tesamid Beis, towards the bottom of the Amud, and we'll count up about, let's say, Be'erach, I'm just estimating about 15 lines up from the bottom of the page, and we're talking about Hoda v'metaltali v'konami yado kosvin v'imlav ein kosvin v'pkarkos v'lo konami yado maya v'imrav ein kosvin v'zuchamar kosvin v'ilchza kosvin. So the Gemara Paskins here like Mar Zutra, then in the case of Karka, the Moda, meaning we'll call him Shimon. Shimon confesses that a certain piece of real estate belongs to Reuven, and he does so in the presence of two Edim. Then the witnesses are authorized to write up a shtar to give it over to Reuven, even though there was no Kanumiyot. And we tried to explain that the reason for that is because in the case of Karka, since it's not Mechusa Gevina, meaning that the Karka belongs now to Ruve wherever it is, then all we're writing in the Shtar is basically testimony that Ruvein is the proud owner of this piece of Karka. Then if you take a look a line below this, the Gemara tells us a story that Ravina Ikla Li Damharia, some sort of place called Damharia, and Amar Lo Ravdimi Barav Baravhuna Midaharnya, Le Ravini turns to Ravini, says, Metaltale vi isnu beinayu mai. And Amar Lo Kimakarkoi Dami. In other words, if they're not just arguing back and forth about an abstract diamond ring or a pearl necklace, you know, somewhere on the face of the earth, but rather they're talking about this pearl necklace that's sitting right here on the table, then we could say Kimakarkoi Dami. Ravashi disagrees, and he says, Kevin de Machastri Gavino Lo. Meaning, even though right now it's clear that Reuven owns this necklace, because Shimon confesses that he owns that Reuven owns the necklace, but nevertheless, Reuven still has to have recourse to collect that necklace. It's not like Karka, wherever the Karka is, it belongs to you. All that is a background here leading up to this Nemuki Yosef. Now Rashi says that the case that the Gemara is vacillating about is a case of Malve, of Milve de Tziburin Umunachim. He doesn't tell you where that Rashi is, unfortunately. Let's see if we can find it. Rashi says, oh yeah, Rashi Diramaskil Mai, which is approximately 10 lines above the end of the daf in Rashi. Rashi says, Kevin de Milvelot saw Nitna. And Rashi seems to indicate that we're talking about a case of Halva. But at the beginning of the Rashi, he says, Did Tziburin, if you want to underline those words, Tziburin umunachim, the odile kol hecha de isnu di dehu. Now, if I understand Rashi correctly, what happens is that the Malva gave the Lova a bag of gold coins, and the Lova has not yet spent that money. So usually in a loan, we say, Milvelot son, and the whole purpose of the loan is for the Lova, the borrower, to use the money and invest it, etc. But here, for whatever reason, he didn't get a chance to invest the money. So the Malva says to the Lova, hey, that bag of gold coins is exactly the bag that I gave you. And the Lova says, I admit that that's true. So that's called Isnu Be'enayhu. Rashi says that Tziburin Unochim, so they're collected, so to speak, piled up, and they're left there on the table. And right now, we're not going to apply the principle of Milvelot Sodnitna, because these are the very material, coins that were given as Alva. The Muki Yosef has a different take on this sugya. Hodim Metaltalin, he says that we're not talking about most milve, but rather we're talking about most pikadon. So Reuven comes to Shimon and he says, "You're a good guy. Do me a favor. I don't have access to my bank account. I can't lock up this money in a safe. I don't own a safe. Would you be kind enough to accept upon yourself the responsibility of a shomer?" So the Muki Yosef says, in such a case, when if the mafkid comes to the shomer, he says, "Well, that's the bag of coins that I gave you, to watch." And now the shomer admits, he confesses in front of two edim. So immediately, once the shomer admits that this bag of coins belongs to Reuven, he was the mafkid who deposited the money in my hands, then immediately Reuven, the mafkid, becomes the owner of this pile of coins. I mean, uncontested. And the Gemara wants to say, in that case, is it considered like karka, and therefore the witnesses have the right to write up a shtar, in which, as we said before, it's basically testimony that this pile of money, this bag of coins, belongs to Reuven. But Rashi says we're talking about a milveh, and this was money that was not deposited in the hands of Shimon in order to guard the money and protect it, but rather was given over to Shimon to own the money, meaning that he's meant to spend the money as a loan. V'tzarech bir, dafilu ayre b'tziburin u'nochim, halo milva lo tzon, n'vahavi shal anitba u'may mesafkele la gemara. So he's not excited here about the Gemara vacillates back and forth as to whether or not it's like karka, because why should it be like karka? The lova owns the money. In the case of Pikadon, this bag of coins clearly is owned by Reuven the Mafkid, right? I'm just, giving it over to you as a deposit. You're basically serving as my safe deposit. That's it. But that money belongs to me. And then it could be like karka, in which it's not mechusa gavina. But if you're going to say like Rashi that we're talking about a lova, a milva, then we have the principle called milva lo tzon, which means the very moment that Reuven gives over to Shimon a sum of money as a loan, Shimon acquires ownership on that money. And therefore, it's just like the case of metaltalin, where the malva, in this case, the malva, whoever it is, has to come and sue the lova and force him to give it back in bezdin. He doesn't own it, because who owns it? The lova owns it until he pays it back. And I think the answer to this question, I hope he's going to say this, is that it's true that milva lo tzon, but that's only after he actually spends the money. Up until the point that he spends the money, he's really holding on to pikadon. And therefore, if he decides, the loaf, for whatever reason, that he doesn't find a lucrative business investment, to invest the money in, then he's just holding on to the money on behalf of the malva. It's only from the second that he spends the money and onwards, then he becomes the owner of this money. But until now, as long as the original bag, the mos, are on his table and the lova hasn't spent it, that's a pikadon, basically. The malva has a right to come back, let's say he has to wait 30 days or whatever is the time allotment, and then he collects that bag of mos. That's what I would say is Rashi Shita over here. He says, Ulam Rashi Bibab Metzia Daf Dalid, Dear Maskel Vehelikos of Lo Hotseisim Vehein Shel Chob Kol Mokum Shehein. Excellent. That if the money hasn't been spent yet, then that's called Helik. Helik means when here's your object, here's your money. Just come and collect it. It's yours.
It's his portion.
Ubiar Zeruv Agosa Shri Pirshu Sherashi Ayre Bemilve. Oh, beautiful. He gives back the very same bag of coins. Shehelvo. And that's called Helich. Kimandagavi. It's as if the Malva has already collected it. Wherever that bag of coins is, it's on the table of the Lova, but it's really in the possession of the Malva. Why? Because the Lova has not yet taken advantage of his opportunity to spend the Mos. And up until the point that he spends the Mos actually belonged to the Malva. I mean, the lover could deny the whole story, but if he admits the whole story, then obviously there's no question about it. Nobody contests the issue, and the Malva owns those mos. Ubir divrei Rashi, the ayri behigias mana piron. I would add the word adayin be'en, meaning they haven't yet been spent. He hasn't invested the money. Mizumanin v'yado l'froa. This feel the Rashi Chai Gavna chal din. She ef shalo hotziyam owed. He's not allowed to spend them anymore because it's already the zman piron. So he wasted a month in which he had the opportunity of spending this money and investing, and he didn't take advantage of that, even though he was given a loan. Is Yochla Malva Lagbosa Mimenu Balkorcho? The Malva doesn't need any green light from the Lover to come and pick up this bag of Mos. It's his bag of Mos. And it's Commander Gavyudov. It's as if it was already collected. So that's really excellent. I'll give you an example of a Daf Gemina. You know, there's a halacha called Makadish B'Milva Eina Mekudeshes. So what does that mean? That means that if let's say Reuven wants to marry Leah, mm-hmm. Now Reuven owes a debt, right? And he says, the money that I borrowed, I'm sorry, not that Reuven owes a debt. It means that Shimon owes Reuven a debt, now. Right? So now Reuven wants
to... Reuven is marrying his sister.
And, well, whatever it is, but yeah. Reuven now wants to take the loan that Shimon borrowed from him, and he and Shimon owes him that money, right? He owes him that money, and take that money and give it over to Leah for Kiddushin. So Gemara says, "Ain't a mekudeshes." Why? Because milvelot son, which means that if Shimon borrowed money from Reuven, Reuven's the makadish, he wants to marry Leah, and Shimon is the borrower, the lover, then that money belongs to Shimon. There's no way that Reuven can take that money and give it over to Leah for Kiddushin. However, let's say that Shimon has not yet touched that money for whatever reason. I'll dramatize it even further. Let's say he gives mana piron, and it's time for Shimon to pay up, and Shimon hasn't touched those mos, the original coins, you know, with the, I don't know, with the Hamilton, was that a $100 bill? Or?
No, he's only on the...
Who's on a $100 bill? I don't know. Anyway, so the original money, you know, sometimes if you get money, especially from a money changer, you'll see little, you know, they put
markings.
So I don't know if that's legal, if you're allowed to play, you know, do that. I don't know what the laws in America, but people do it anyway, right? So here's the markings. These are the original monies that Reuven gave to Shimon. Shimon didn't take advantage of it. Now Reuven is allowed to be Mekadesh and Isha with that bag of coins.
Right.
Why? Because there's no Milvel Otson in it until the moment that the Lova, meaning Shimon, actually spends the money. So that's what we're seeing. That's what we're seeing clearly over here. Now, what I want to do, just because we only have a few minutes left.
Well, his obligation is different, if I may. His obligation is different than someone who, for example, would be given the money and said, I'm giving this to you for safekeeping. And as a result, he pays him a small amount. And in another case is where simply he's saying, look, I'm going to leave this with you, don't mind it, in your home, if you could just put it away for me. So the two different, one is an obligation that is transactional, there's a transaction.
Oh, you talk about a Shomer Socha, that like I'm paying you for the Shmira, for the protection.
Yeah, I guess.
And the other case is where I don't pay you at all.
Exactly.
Oh, so the difference would be in what's called Gneva Vaved, if the money gets stolen,
right.
So in the first case he would have to pay, he has compensation, but in the second case, it's not, if it was no Pshia, in other words, he locked it up the way he should have, but somehow the Ganovim broke through, then he's not liable to pay for that.
Right.
But again, as far as our question is concerned, when the owner of the object comes to the Shomer and he says, that's my object, and the Shomer admits that it's true in front of two witnesses, then in this case, the witnesses, even without getting express permission from, we'll call him Shimon, he was the one who was Moda,
right.
They can write up the shtar. Why? Because it's Commander Gavyadon. So that's the way that Rebbe Yosef interprets our sugya. Rashi says, we're talking about a loan. It wasn't a case where he deposited the money and asked them to watch it. He gave them the money as a loan. And here, to say it's Keman de Gavi Tov is a Pella, that's what all the Rishonim were asking on Rashi, because, what do you mean Keman de Gavi? The Lova who borrows this money, the moment he gets the money, he owns the money.
Yes.
He's not going to give back that same bag of coins.
Exactly.
But the answer to that is that Rashi has a unique shita here. The Rashi says, you're right, Milvalotson, and the Lova acquires ownership on the coins, but only from what moment and on? From the moment that he spends the money.
Right.
Until he spends the money and the bag of mos is on the table, the Malva has a right to say that those are my mos. You haven't spent it yet. I offered you the opportunity, but until you take advantage. And Kolshken, if the Zman Piron already came, that the Lova no longer has rights to use that money. He can't even invest that money because it's the Zman Piron, and the Malva has rights to collect that very bag of mos. And in such a case, Rashi holds Keman de Gavi Domi, and that's why the Edom who heard this Hodah are allowed to write up the Shtar even without Kana Miyoda.
You remember you taught us in a very beautiful way when this person who passed away is telling his son, basically in a dream, this is where the money is,
right,
for the orphans. Yeah.
Correct.
Yeah.
And in that case, we don't know whether or not we should believe the Sar HaChalomos.
Nahon.
Because ein chalom b'li dvar b'telem, you know, there's
right.
So a chalom is not reliable. Although there is something in the tshuvas, I thought I'd find it here. I didn't find it yet. That sometimes we do. So I want to tell you a story about the Chofetz Chaim. This is more of an ethical discussion, but it's something I can't hold back, you know, because it's so connected. The Chofetz Chaim on a weekly basis, every Shabbos in the city of Radin, where he came from before Mincha, he would interpret Tehillim. Now here's this great mind, this great giant, this great Rosh Yeshiva, but he wasn't embarrassed. It was important, and he gave a shiur just in Pshat and Tehillim. So he got up to, I think it's chapter 91, it's a very famous chapter, we know it by heart, and it says there, Mi alay b'har Hashem u'mi yakum b'mkol kodesho asher lo nasal ashov nafshi v'lo nishbal mirma. So the audience, you know, somebody from the kahal raised his hand and he asked the Chofetz Chaim, why does it say asher lo nasal ashov nafshi? In Hebrew grammar, the proper way would have been asher lo nasal ashov nafsho. You know, it's who's this great person that climbs the apex of spirituality and avodas Hashem? He hasn't wasted away his nefesh. It should have said his nefesh, which would be nafsho,
rather than mine.
Yeah, instead it says my nefesh,
yeah,
capital
right,
M, nafshi.
Right.
So the Chofetz Chaim was famous. Whenever he had to answer a question, he tried to find a mashal, you know, a simile to a metaphor to explain. So he gives him the following metaphor. He says the following. There was a person by the name of Yankel, we're just making up the name, right? And Yankel had a business, but his business went sour. And he had a friend named Chaim. So he decides that when a lucrative investment came along, he would go to Chaim and ask for a loan. So he knocks on Chaim's door. Oh, Chaim, I haven't seen Yankel, I haven't seen you in so long. They kiss and they hug. He tells him the whole story, and then Chaim says, Yankel, how much money do you need? So Yankel says, I need 1,000 rubles, which was a significant sum. Without hesitation, Chaim goes over to the safe. He was a Baruch Hashem, he was a wealthy guy. And he counts out gold coins to the tune of 1,000 rubles. And he wraps it up in a bag, gives it to him. And he says to his friend Yankel, please bring it back in a year. Yankel says, no problem. A year later, to the day, Yankel shows up. And he puts on his friend Chaimka's table, in front of Chaim, the same exact bag of coins that he got a year ago. And Chaimka at this point gets very angry. He says, I don't understand. I gave you a loan because I knew you had an opportunity, you were down and out, to invest that money. And now I wasted that money. I could have used that money to invest. Instead, I tied it up for a year. My high. So the Chofetz Chaim says the mashal is for us. HaKadosh Baruch Hu has a nefesh, he's eternal, and he gives a little, so to speak, a piece of his nefesh to every single person. and a person lives for 70 years, 80 years, 90 years, as long as he lives. Now, HaKadosh Baruch expects that he will return the nefesh on a higher level than he got it before. He would have invested that nefesh. There were so many opportunities. Instead, after 120 years, he gives back the same nefesh that God gets. That's la asher nasol ashav nafshi. You wasted away my nefesh. I could have used that nefesh to invest it in someone else. So I just couldn't. I couldn't overcome my desire to share that with you.
It's beautiful.
It's a very powerful word from the Chofetz Chaim. So we'll just take 5 more minutes and then I'll let you go. I want to look on the next page. I'm not saying we shouldn't go back, but just to take a look at the following case. Here's a case where the shtar that was written up by Beis Din only has 2 signatures on it. Now, a Beis Din requires 3 judges, minimum. What happened to the 3rd judge? So now, a classic case would be where Nebuch, the 3rd judge, after the verdict was handed down, he passed away. So what they do is, in such a case, on the shtar, they write that we, the following judges, were there, and they name all the 3 judges, but one of us went to his eternal repose, and that's why he's not signed on the shtar. Then it becomes crystal clear that this shtar was the verdict of a valid Beis Din. It was made up of 3 judges, and 1 judge never died. In this case, they found a shtar that came in front of Beis Din. There were only 2 signatures on the shtar, and they didn't add that line that the 3rd judge had passed away. So the Gemara vacillates back and forth as to whether we can rely on such a shtar. Why? One argument was, yes, let's rely on the shtar based on a principle called Reish Lakish. Reish Lakish had a principle that whenever you have 2 signatures on a shtar, any question that you come up with, the shtar validates itself. It's like a Tudat Hechsher. You know, you go into a restaurant, you don't know this question, that question. Did they do Malicha? Did they do Shechita? Was this done properly? Was that? The shtar is Machsher. It tells you it's kosher. You rely totally on the. So too, Reish Lakish says, you see 2 witnesses signed in the shtar. Every question that you raise on whether the shtar was valid, you assume it was valid. Here too, we have a shtar. We don't know where the 3rd dayan is. There's only 2 signed on the shtar. The answer is, the 2 Edim will answer whatever question you have, and the shtar is Machsher is Atzmo, and we assume that the 3rd judge passed away. Then the Gemara says, well, maybe we shouldn't rely on Reish Lakish in this case. Why? Because Chayshina LeBezdin Toim. Maybe the Bezdin made a mistake. They thought that 2 judges would be sufficient. Why would they think such a crazy thing? Because they had a unanimous decision, which is in this case 2 out of 2. And even had there been a 3rd judge on the court and he would have a dissenting opinion, it wouldn't make an iota of a difference, a dent, because 1 against 2 is worthless. So they came to the conclusion in their minds that we can judge this case, hand down a verdict based on 2 witnesses. That's called a Beis Din Toim. They made a mistake. And in such a case, according to the Gemara, we can't apply the principle of Reish Lakish, because it's very possible, I don't know how common it would be, that they would have made such a mistake. Then the Gemara introduces Shmuel. Shmuel actually says that if a Beis Din is made up of only 2 judges, then it's called a Beis Din Chatzuf. That's a real chutzpah that they did such a thing. But dinam din, that if they handed down a verdict, the halacha recognizes the validity of that verdict. So here he quotes Amran.
No matter what?
As far as I know, no matter what. What do you mean? Maybe you have something in mind that I'm not aware of.
No, I don't know. Would there ever be an exception to that?
For example, ask me. Give me a case.
Yeah. No, there's a question of money that's owed from one person to another, and the other person says, look, you have only 2 signatures, and I don't think they reached a proper decision. I'd like this to be retried by 3 judges, and for them to reach a conclusion.
So the Gemara is vacillating about this very point. One argument says we can rely on it because there are 2 valid witnesses, right. There must have been a 3rd judge, and that's what we're going to say. The other says, no, maybe there was a Beis Din Toim. Maybe they mistakenly thought they could get away with the judgment with 2 judges. So the Ran says the following. He says, Atos, what kind of mistake did they make? Shechoshishim b'hem shetoim b'shnayim shiyu Beis Din. And that's what we said until now, that they made a mistake thinking that 2 judges comprise a Beis Din, and that's a valid Beis Din, that's a court, and they can hand down a decision. And the Ran is not happy with this. The MK Maikomer of Nachman Bosok, and the next line of the Gemara of Nachman says, Ikasa Be Dino lo tzarich, if it says in the shtar that we as a Beis Din signed below came to the following verdict, then we don't have to be choshesh that they would have mistakenly established a Beis Din with only two. Once they wrote the word Beis Din, then in the shtar we assume they understood that a Beis Din is made up of three and the third Dayan Nebuch is not alive anymore. Hare b'shvil zeh lo yatzanu zos me'achashash kibim ne'tos rishonu so b'shneim hei Beis Din. What does Rav Nachman gain if the two words Beis Din are written in the shtar? Rashi's saying we're afraid that they thought a Beis Din could be comprised of only two judges. So even if they wrote a Beis Din, what they had in mind is a Beis Din that's made up of two judges. V'hine girsas haran b'rashi oysa shechoshin shetoim b'shneim sheyu Beis Din. The Ran thought that they made a mistake thinking that two judges are a Beis Din. And therefore the Ran jumps and yells on Rashi, how then could Rav Nachman salvage the shtar if they wrote the words Beis Din? What do you mean? They thought a Beis Din, mistakenly they thought a Beis Din was two judges. That's how they convinced themselves. Oh, however, that's Rashi as the Ran had Rashi. We have a different Rashi. Ulam b'Rashi shelfaneinu isa she-Beis Din toim, Svurim sheyu shnayim ksherim lodun, aval enoch inami enom toim lom sheshnayim choshev Beis Din. Umshim hachi shaper ka'omer of Nachman, the ikos of Beidina lo tzorach. So let me just summarize what he says over here. The Rashi that we have is not the same Rashi that the Ran had. Okay, now let's see if we can find Rashi on Daf Lamed. He doesn't tell you what the Dibra Maskler Rashi is, but hopefully we'll find it. Where is it? Oh, let's see if we can find it. So we're on Daf Lamed Omid Aleph, and let's see. No, I'm on the wrong page. I think I'm on the right page, but I'm not finding the Rashi.
Yeah, but the top?
Towards the top?
The third line?
Third line, oh great.
The Beis Din
Toim. Rashi says, the Beis Din Toim, Svurim, Sheyu Shnayim Ksherim Ladun. So how is that different than the Ran? Let's just see. Nachum, I'll just read this one more time. Ulam b'Rashi l'fanei nishav bezentom svurim sheyu shnayim ksherim ladun. Okay, that's what we have. Ah. Oh, ksherim ladun. He's making a distinction between A and B. A is ksherim ladun and B is bezden. They knew that you need three judges as a Beis Din, so that mistake they didn't make. But they thought that two judges would be Ksherim Ladun. Now, what does that mean, Ksherim Ladun, if they're not a Beis Din? Ah, I see. In other words, you can have two kinds of categories of a Gemar Din, of a verdict. There's a verdict of a Beis Din, and then there's a verdict of two judges. Now, I'm just thinking out loud, what would be the difference between the two? I mean, if two judges are valid, then that's L'chora Beis Din. I'll tell you what I have in the back of my mind, that if it's only a decision of two judges, but they don't form a Beis Din, then in such a case, just one second, trying to think about payment if they made a mistake. Again, I'm just going to throw something out here. Again, we don't have time. We'll have to do the balance of this article. But would the judges be held responsible if they made a mistake? Right? We have a halacha of Toz Beis. So I'm thinking to myself, well, if their final psak was a psak of a Beis Din, then it could be that there may be a lack of protection for a Beis Din.
They have immunity, basically.
Immunity,
yes. Because of the fact that if it's a civil matter, which it is, of course,
right,
it's a financial issue, and even if the third person was not able to be there, for God forbid any reason, that was given, then they have, in any case, the majority has ruled the two out of three also.
Right.
So as a result, even if he would have gone for or against, they That's still would have the majority.
Correct. So what they mistakenly thought is that the halacha would recognize the validity of their decision, although, albeit not as a bezdin. And that might mean that they take on extra responsibility,
personal responsibility
in the event of a lawsuit against them because they made a boo-boo. I'm just thinking out loud.
But the moment they are part of a court, then they have that possibility of not being personally liable.
Correct.
Because
the halacha sees a bezdin as a separate category, a separate entity. It's almost like above reality. It exists as some sort of legal concept.
And you can almost go back to that beautiful example in the Talmud with regard to when God came up. Yes, the whole guy came, yeah, even there, right? So, but no, this is not between you, God, and ourselves now. You gave us the Torah, we're interpreting
right.
it.
Right, think about what it's
saying. That's right, exactly.
Right. It's not in the heavens.
Exactly, so you know, that basically it's...
So Rav Bosai, what I'd like to do again,
that's
you'll
beautiful.
Be Esteem tomorrow,
nice.
Is in Mirtz Hashem to try to pick this up and develop this tomorrow, and I'm wondering, you know, if he'll go in our direction. I don't know.
Very
I'm
nice,
hoping he will.
Very nice.
Okay, then? There are a lot of different legal concepts here that are fascinating.
They're very, very important. Very important to a court. In today's I just wish that we would adopt Jewish law in Israel, because it makes much. It's so much more just in every way.